We continue with our Lenten series on the story of Joseph. For those who might have missed a week, or just need a refresher anyway, because sometimes we do. Previously on the story of Joseph, Joseph was beaten and sold into slavery by his own flesh and blood, his brothers, the children of Israel. Joseph sank from slavery even to the depths of Egypt's dungeon pit. And his one hope, his prediction of the dreams of a cupbearer and a bread baker of Pharaoh. That hope died when the baker was executed and the cupbearer forgot about him entirely. Joseph was in prison, forgotten by all but God, with no way forward. We continue with the scripture from Genesis 41. Listen for the word of God. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile when out of the river there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled." So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh. "But God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "In my dream, I was standing on the bank of the Nile, when out of the river there came up 7 cows, fat and sleek, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows came up, scrawny and very ugly and lean. I had never seen such ugly cows in all the land of Egypt. The lean, ugly cows ate up the 7 fat cows that came up first. But even after they ate them, no one could tell that they had done so. They looked just as ugly as before. Then I woke up. In my dream, I saw 7 heads of grain, full and good, growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads sprouted, withered and thin and scorched by the east wind. And the thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 good heads. I told this to the magicians, but none of them could explain it to me." Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads of grain are 7 years. It is one and the same dream. The seven lean, ugly cows that came up afterward are 7 years, and so are the seven worthless heads of grain. Scorched by the east wind, they are 7 years of famine. It is just as I said to Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt, but 7 years of famine will follow them. Then all the abundance of Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will ravage the land. The abundance of the land will not be remembered, because the famine that follows it will be so severe. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. And now, let Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of those good years that are coming and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. The food should be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by the famine. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man? One in whom is the spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." And Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, "Make way." Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all of Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. During the 7 years of abundance, the land produced plentifully. Joseph collected all the food produced in those 7 years of abundance in Egypt and stored it in the cities. In each city, he put the food grown in the fields surrounding it. Joseph stored up huge quantities of grain like the sand of the sea. It was so much that he stopped keeping records because it was beyond measure. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, "It is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household." The second son he named Ephraim and said, "It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." This is the word of the Lord. For ancient kings across the ancient Near East, seen by their people as gods upon earth, their dreams were thought matters of national import. Their scribes spent decades, centuries, building up whole long lists of possible symbols, for they thought that the land and heaven alike spoke through their god king. Pharaoh finds himself standing at the Nile, away from his palace, lost in his dreaming. It flows through the midst of the desert, through the Sahara, empty, barren waste for a space larger than the entire United States today. If for all the emptiness here there is life, one blue thread of it, fragile but rich for the great river that pulses through the center, how could Egypt not be beloved of the gods? Pharaoh in his dream stands by the heartbeat of the land, which beats in season, surging and receding and feeding the earth, making the desert to bloom into food, the rushes and reeds which have been cut to make wheat, the water in which the peasants wade to nourish the kingdom. He rejoices in the bounty of his kingdom with his feet in the dirt which is his, the fat cows as they should be, the growing wheat as it should be. And then they are eaten, not by crocodiles or beasts, but by other cows, starving and skeletal. The lean, ugly cows. And he sees the crops of his kingdom, the grain from which his bread is made, is also eaten, not by locust or grasshopper or fungus, but by other withered grain. He sees the weak eat the strong, and Pharaoh is the rich and fat and strong. How could he not tremble at this? He whose rule depended on the people seeing him as the one who ensured heaven's bountiful harvest, how could he not fear the withered grain? He wakes from his river dream, soaked in a river of sweat. So he asks his scribes, "What do your books say about that? What of cannibal cows and wheat eating wheat?" I think it would be a mistake to imagine that his priest would simply be silent at this. The dream is so clearly symbolic of something. They would have ideas and debates. Pharaoh had the power to kill, and they had to show their knowledge. They couldn't look like idiots. You do not have to imagine hard the kind of flattery they might feed, the kind of person on whom their whole livelihood depended. The lean cows are the hardened soldiers of Pharaoh overtaking his well-fatted enemies. The lean cows are the vices of the people corrupting your kingdom. The withered wheat is another plot by the bread makers against your lordship. No, the Pharaoh would say. For though his dream was unclear, it pushed itself to the surface of his mind. It would not leave him. No, that is not it. And the scribes would fall silent after a while. Best to stop speaking instead of angering Pharaoh again. After all, this dream sounded like a bad omen, and if they were not sure, it was best not to give bad news. And they were not sure. So he asked interpreter after interpreter, unsatisfied, until finally, hope against hope of an answer, the cupbearer whose dream Joseph read at the prompting of God, the cupbearer who had promised that once he was free, he would remember Joseph. He did not remember. For years he forgot. Perhaps he didn't like to think of his dark days in prison. And so he did not think of the comforting man who lived there, imprisoned unjustly. But some seed planted way back then blossoms in his mind now. He's ashamed at his failure, but now he can make good to his prison friend, however late, if he's still there, and he can be of service to his king. So he tells Pharaoh of this mysterious man, the man whose strange Hebrew God whispered the meaning of dreams in his ear, this man who knew Pharaoh's judgments even before Pharaoh announced them. Both his own elevation as the holder of the cup and the bread maker's execution on the tree. And Pharaoh is sleepless and desperate, desperate enough even to turn to a criminal slave and the slave's strange God. And so they set out to bring Joseph up from his dungeon. How strange it must have been. Joseph, who had known for certain the blessings of God on earth once, who had sunk to a low place he knew he did not deserve and moldered there. His one human hope had been extinguished. He knew all people had forgotten him for years. It somehow kept faithful to God in his hopelessness. Somehow not turned cruel in his pain. And now his gaunt form is clothed in new Egyptian linen. His overgrown prisoner's beard shaved and trimmed for the Egyptian court. His gaunt and hollow eyes coated with the court eyeliner of the Egyptian rich, ready to stand before Pharaoh. This is the Pharaoh who Joseph has known execute people on a whim. This is the Pharaoh who Joseph has seen raise people to glory on a whim. His own life has seen its ups and downs, so perhaps he does not know what to expect. As he stands before Pharaoh, all his fine vesture still not quite covering up the wear of years on his face and his body. As he stands there, he likely looks much as one of those lean cows himself. Skeletal and worn. And Pharaoh perhaps expects some grand display from the prisoner, some demonstration of power and magic. And Joseph does not give one. "I cannot do what you ask," he says. "I don't have any power here," he says. And he knows that in his hungry bones. It is God who will give Pharaoh an answer, the answer he desires. What else is there to do? Pharaoh tells the man his dream. And Joseph tells him right back. The fat cows, the rich grain, 7 good years with abundant harvest. And then there are the lean cows, the withered wheat, the years of pain and famine that will come. This does not sound like Joseph is giving Pharaoh the answer he desires. Who would want to hear of famine and hunger? Perhaps Pharaoh could shoot the messenger. Kings have done that. Especially people they saw as magicians. Pharaoh might even have thought Joseph was the one cursing his land with famine. It is a dangerous speech. But Pharaoh has been desperate a long time. He has known his dream is beyond his power. And now he knows he hears an answer, so he keeps listening. "Lean years," Joseph says. "Lean years. But acting in faith, there can be enough food yet. Food enough to carry the whole people through those lean years, even other lands that will come to you, Pharaoh. Find a prime minister to manage things well," he says. "And though times will grow hard, there will be enough. With wisdom and discernment, a wise person." "Someone like you," Pharaoh says. "Manage by the wisdom of your God." And so Joseph does. He lives by the word of the God who was with him in prison. And he lives also clothed in the glory of Pharaoh. All his years of hunger and pain have prepared him to lead a people who will themselves suffer hunger and pain. There is none so worthy as this in all the land. I wonder if Joseph smiles. He is starting to see the hand of God that he could not see in the dungeon. He's starting to see that God was making a way out of nothing, that God was preparing him not just for his own freedom, but for the rescue of many. It does not take away his pain, not yet, but there are blessings still. Though he is still far from his old family, he starts a new one with a wife and children. He gives the children names that come from where he has found himself. Manasseh means forgetting. "God has made me forget my old troubles and my father's household," he says. Yet even in this new blessing, Joseph is still speaking of his old pains, his suffering, and his father's household. Even as he talks about the blessings that have come instead. "And Ephraim," which means fruitfulnesses. "God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering," he says. Surprise at fruitfulness. But first of all, it is the land that he has known as a prisoner. There are names that come from blessing, from the start of healing, but not its completion. They're names that have old wounds mixed in with the blessing. God has more surprises to come for Joseph. The story is not over yet. Speaking to the people of God now, here, I have not had certain visions of cows and wheat. I do not know what the years to come will bring to the people of Penningtonville, whether they will be fat or lean years, plenty or want, hardship or joy. I would imagine a fair share of both. And yet I know God has worked through this congregation to feed the hungry, to nurture those in hardship. And I think that will continue. And I know that here at the table we meet the one who has known the depths of our hardship, even unto the cross, and who has known the heights of the glory to come, one who can lead better than any Pharaoh or king of the earth. There is none so worthy as the crucified one. And whatever the years to come will bring, here at the table there is food enough to nourish us through fat or lean years, through whatever crosses the world may hold, until we find ourselves in glory.